This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World Resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. Hi, this is Len Tessa. We're back for another edition of the Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World Disney Dish with Jim Hill podcast. Today we're at Downtown Disney, the Marketplace and Pleasure Island, talking about all of the fun things going on there. Jim, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's a lovely afternoon here in Central Florida. The rains have passed. The heat is out. We're slowly melting into the sidewalks. Let's start walking. We're starting off over at the left side of the complex, over by Cirque du Soleil La Nuba. Jim, is there anything new going on with bendy French people?
Well, they actually sent out a survey, I want to say 8 months ago, asking people basically about what they'd be looking for with a replacement for La Nuba. And on the survey, it was kind of interesting. They asked whether they'd like to see a Disney-themed show. Would they like to see a Disney, literally a Disney Broadway type show? And again, I don't know how they would ever make this work given, the various master licensing agreements for Islands of Adventure. But they actually asked about a Marvel themed show, which suggested that, that Spider-Man show in New York?
Yeah, Spider-Man, I hear it's a hit.
Yeah. So I don't know. The belief is that while there is interest in continuing interest in La Nuba, it is, we're 10 years into the run.
Oh, yeah, easily, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just interest is waning.
I think everyone that's wanted to have seen it would have seen it by now, especially the locals, right?
Yeah, I want to say 97, so 15 years into its run. So come on, it's just, but at the same time, there is so much other stuff that they actually have to deal with over here that it's like La Nuba is on the list, kind of like Disney Quest, but, when you look at the fact that you have this giant empty Virgin megastore that you had to scramble and put Splitsville into,
right?
You got other priorities. You don't take teeth out of the smile. You replace the ones that are missing.
Good point. So speaking of Disney Quest, we're walking up on that. It's immediately on our right-hand side. On our left is the House of Blues. House of Blues was one of the last few places in Walt Disney World I'd not had a chance to eat. Now I have. Actually, wasn't bad. Not great. Not if I'd go back, but not bad. But let's talk about Disney Quest here for a little bit. Five stories of virtual interactive fun, Jim.
Yeah, and again, on paper, this should have worked. And, back in the day, the plan was for 30 of these nationwide. In
30.
Fact, they built this one. They had the second one built in Chicago. They had actually started construction. The foundation work for the one in Philadelphia when it just became apparent that it was not going to work the way Disney had hoped. And, continuing kind of our theme for this trip, that one of the reasons Disney keeps this open is for school groups and rainy days.
Yeah, that's true. It just rained a couple hours ago previously, and we definitely see a bunch of kids now coming out of out of Disney Quest. You'd mentioned earlier, though, that there's a couple of interesting things in here. One of them was that there's a Pirates of the Caribbean virtual simulator ride in here, right?
Yeah, and that's the real irony of this situation, where this was the last thing that went into the building. But to give you some idea of how long ago that was, this actually predates Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, the first film in the series.
Wow.
And they've never thought to circle back on it. They've never thought, we have Johnny Depp, we have Captain Jack Sparrow, we could put this character in there. It's just the attitude at Disney is we have put every dollar that we want to put into Disney Quest. Right now, it's all about upkeep. They'll replace the carpets. They'll occasionally go in and paint. Because, again, when you're throwing high school groups in there for, they don't even do grad night here anymore.
A couple, right. But you throw a bunch of high school students in there for a couple hours every day, for days on end.
Yep.
Yeah, the stuff starts to wear down.
No, absolutely.
I can definitely see that.
But, so it's just right now until they deal with the other issues, that stays the way it is.
We're walking up now on, we've got the Wolfgang Puck restaurants on our left, and we've got what will soon be Splitsville on our right. Have you dined at the Wolfgang Puck restaurants?
It has been a while.
They're not bad, actually. They do really good flatbreads. The sushi's really good. I mean, sort of the things that you would expect from Wolfgang Puck are pretty good. It's also reasonably difficult to get a reservation there,
which is surprising.
Given that it's not in a theme park.
No, absolutely. In fact, that's what's kind of interesting about the West Side. And the other thing is that they're, frankly trying to address here. That's the whole Hyperion Wharf project. There's a problem with Downtown Disney. And basically the problem is that people who are over on the original market site, mm-hmm. They don't make it all the way over here.
Nobody gets over to where we're at right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's and for a lot of years, they believed it was because of the gated Pleasure Island, which is why they pulled the gates out.
In the middle.
Yep. Right. And then literally the theory was now, well, there's a hill.
There's a hill?
And you know those Disney tourists, they're fat, you know, and they're slow moving, and they don't want to go up that hill. So they're going to stay on the market side. So that was actually part of the plan of Hyperion Wharf, literally flattening Hill Street. Huh. You know, and now, you know, of course, that project stalled up because of the financial crisis of 2008.
Right.
And, you know, we're still waiting to see what iteration of that arrives. I mean, in fact, I'm fascinated by the fact that Splitsville goes in here, and yep. Yet you and I both know that they're building that multi-lane bowling complex at the ESPN, you know, Wide World of Sports.
Yeah, so we're going from none to two bowling complexes in the space of 24 months.
I mean, does that make any sense? I mean, I get it that the one that's ESPN is going to be for tournament.
Tournament. Yeah, that's exactly it.
And, you know, they're also talking about they're going to make it available to cast members and broadcast events. And this is more literally what it is. This is for the tourists to come in and play.
Yeah, to play, to drink. You know, they'll have restaurants, they'll have bars and stuff like that, yeah.
But, again,
it's casual bowling, as it were.
But to go from zero to two, it's sort of like, okay, I'm not sure you're meeting demand. First show me that there's demand.
Exactly.
You know.
How far down was that the survey list of, would you like more bowling?
Would you like even more bowling?
Exactly. So we're walking past now Bongos. Have you been to Bongos?
Long ago. I mean, literally just when this opened.
It's two things about Bongos, because I've eaten there a couple of times recently. One, it's incredibly difficult to get into Bongos at 5:30 on a weekday. It's crowded.
Hmm.
Two, it is the second loudest restaurant I've ever been in my life behind T-Rex. It is undeniably loud.
Now, it's interesting you bring up T-Rex because, of course, that's the same corporate... Isn't it the same corporate group that did initially the jungle theme restaurant, the Rainforest Cafe?
Yeah, Rainforest, yeah, same thing.
Oh, dear Lord. I took my daughter there, and we ended up... You know, again, luck of the draw. You know, she's only two at this point. We end up under the thunderstorm.
Oh, jeez. With a two-year-old?
Yes.
Did you piss off the waitress, the cedar?
I don't know what happened, but literally, my daughter started off in a high chair. By the end of the meal, she was under the high chair.
Under the table, yeah.
And occasionally, you'd see this hand snake up between lightning strikes and grab a chicken nugget. But it was, you know, we were working that out in therapy for quite some time.
Oh, that's a shame. So. We passed by the AMC Theater. We've passed by Candy Cauldron, a couple of other Sunglass Hut. Blink by Wet Seal. Anything interesting at all about these? These are really sort of mid-tier mall shops, right?
Well, I think the story is if you think about how many times these have changed over. You know, they really, really, really struggled to find a mix of stores that would appeal. And ironically, again, here we're walking by Vinylmation, which is...
Oh, D Street, yeah. Let's stop into D Street.
So
D Street seems to be the busiest of all of the stores, which
that's because moderately interesting. Carefully nurtured and grown, you know, this collectible. You know.
The Vinylmation collectible. So we're sitting in front of a giant shelf of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 levels of Vinylmation parks, urbans, Clears, Muppets, Star Wars, Toy Stories, Animations, Pirates of the Caribbean, Cutesters, and more. That's a lot of Vinylmations.
But again, it's still enough that you can wrap your arms around it. In fact, the what guides the Vinylmation people is, you know, the key principle is don't do what we did with pins. You know, don't get nakedly greedy. Don't make it impossible for a collector to actually collect. And, you know, so that's the interesting thing about Vinylmation is they constantly have a hand on the brake. You know, it's just sort of like, let's do more, but not too much more.
Yeah, pins are interesting because
I don't know that anyone knows exactly how many pins Disney made.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted to, for me, I'm a completist, right? Mm-hmm. I would want every pin.
Yep.
There's nowhere where you could go that to say, okay, this is the definitive list of Disney pins. And every day they add, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens
and
more.
And that's ultimately what happened. They did themselves in. Even the most diehard collectors just stood at the edge of the phenomenon. It's like, I can't do this. I can't compete. I can't complete my collection.
I can't do 15,000 pins.
No, that's it exactly. Yeah. And so, so many people, fell away. So
that's a shame. Because, I mean, the pin idea was great. And some of the pin ideas that they had, especially the ones with the moving parts, were pretty clever. Some of them were very well done. But yeah, I mean, you know, you get greedy. You want to sell, you know, each pin for... Remember these pins started off at like $4?
Yeah.
And then they started being, you know, like $6, $7, then $8, then $12, then $13. That's a lot for
again,
a pin.
Disney got nakedly greedy. But we're actually at the corner here at the top of West Street. And this is... do you remember... when they actually had the store here for David Copperfield Underground?
I don't. What was it like?
Well, that was what was kind of interesting about it. Because, again, this was the infamous project that never quite opened.
I thought the infamous project, David Copperfield project that never opened, was his marriage to Claudia Schiffer. No? No?
I get it. I'll take a drink of water. You talk.
Okay. How about those Disney lawyers? Anyway. As a tease for the restaurant, which hadn't been built yet, they actually, right here at the end of the corner here, built a David Copperfield outfit. And it had blacked out windows and the wonderful, you know, Magic Underground logo. And one day, you know, again, it was supposed to open in June, and it was supposed to open in July, and it was supposed to open in August, and it never opened. And one day I'm over here, and I said, I can't help myself. I open the door, and I look inside, and it's literally just ductwork. It's just, you know, they clearly had gotten to a certain point and stopped, you know, because again, that was the whole thing. They had the prototype building ready to go in New York. They literally, you know, were getting ready to ship the last stage pieces into the building when they got the money ran out. We don't send anything. We're done. But anyway, I open the door, I look at the ductwork, and I close the door, and I get in the rental car, and I'm driving away from property, and finally, it's like, oh, damn it! It was a magic shop. I should have opened the door twice, and it would actually have been the restaurant. You get like, look inside. Okay, it's awkward. Open. Hey, it's a store full of merchandise.
The hidden compartment.
The hidden compartment. The oh, I was a moron.
There's a story there. So. We're also walking past Characters in Flight, which I guess came over to World from Paris.
Yeah, it did.
It's more popular in Paris, I think.
Yeah, I think part of that is because... there, you literally lift up and look down into the parks. Here, you're, oh, wow, look over there. That. I enjoy the former Disney Institute. You know, I want to see it from great heights.
Look, Saratoga Springs. Ooh.
There you go. Ooh. But, you know, that coupled with the fact that building something like this in the lightning strike capital of the world, probably not, you know.
I was watching them try and land the balloon in a pretty windy night. Mm-hmm. One time I was having dinner over at Paradiso 37. Mm-hmm. And it was like trying to watch them dock the Hindenburg after the sparks had hit.
Oh, dear.
Like, okay, we got to get this thing down. The people who were on it were clearly hanging on for dear life. And the thing was, you know, it's tethered, right?
Yep.
So as they're pulling it down, the tether is holding it down, but it starts to oscillate even more because there's all that energy, right?
Yep.
And it's funny because people get off it, they're seasick, they're walking off it all staggering, and for a while after that, no one would go on.
I can't understand why.
Yeah, right? Okay. We're overlooking Planet Hollywood right now. We're behind Planet Hollywood.
I have to tell this story. From when this restaurant opened, I believe June 97, they were behind schedule, but they had already committed to the classic Planet Hollywood event of Bruce Willis, Frank Stallone, Schwarzenegger, everyone was going to come. So come hell or high water. And again, you got to remember that Robert Earl lived in Orlando. So they were going to get this done. And literally a half hour before the celebrities arrived, they're laying tile. I mean, just literally bang, 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 putting down tile. And they put this thing together so fast toward the end. The restaurant is open for about a week when the waiter waves the manager over and says, the customer's complaining about being dripped on. It's like, it's not raining outside. We don't have any water pipes up there. They look up to the ceiling, and it's like, they're directly below Herbie. And it's one of these things where it's like, before we put Herbie into place, did anybody drain the crankcase?
It's oil?
Literally, that they actually had to move the tables around in Planet Hollywood because Herbie was dripping oil. They put him up there so fast, nobody thought to drain things out of him. He dripped. He was the perpetually dripping Herbie.
That's
gotta be for 3 or 4 years. Anyway, again, another one of these things that they had hoped would energize, the marketplace, and never quite took off the way they'd hoped. But of course, you know, by the time they were building this Planet Hollywood, the chain was spinning in.
Yeah.
So,
have they opened up any more? We're on the bridge now, going over to Pleasure Island right now.
They tried doing smaller, low key things, and again with newer sets of celebrities, because obviously, you know, Willis and Schwarzenegger and Stallone wound up suing Robert. Never quite took off. And now, to be honest, Robert basically concentrates on Earl of Sandwich.
Really?
So, yeah. In fact, they're about to open up one at Disneyland.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
yeah, we're coming. So we're walking up onto the backside of Pleasure Island. Over here was the Comedy Warehouse, right?
Yeah.
And so they kind of see them experimenting with this form again in the improv that we talked about at the studios earlier.
Yeah, just, again, I spent so much time at the Adventurers Club. In fact, back in the day when I was making my living as a scriptwriter, I actually wrote and sold a pilot for the Adventurers Club TV show. The weird thing is I worked with two members of the Adventurers Club. We got the Disney Channel interested. In fact, they loved the idea they were going to shoot it here on location.
Sure.
And in fact, they were going to do things like, for example, we put the Bible together for the show where, you know, they would do the Jane Goodall thing and they'd go down to the Jungle Cruise and, you know, you'd have one of the adventurers hiding in a blind at the hippo pool. And, you know, and he was like, oh, that one's agitated. It's wiggling its ears. But he would have done the Jane Goodall thing. It's like, you know, he named all the hippos. Like, right. Well, that's Snowball. And that's Cupcake. And we literally got done in. You know, they loved the idea. They were going to do it, shoot it here in Florida. In fact, they were talking about using a lot of talent from the actual club. And then, to be honest, there was a step away from shooting things in Florida, and more to the point, there was this sort of thinking, Disney Channel, why don't we go after the kids? And that was sort of the rise of, not necessarily Hannah Montana, but the shows that predated it.
Right.
I'm blanking the name of the young blonde lady who...
Lizzie McGuire.
There we go.
Oh, okay. I love that show.
It was cute.
It was cute.
An adventure show would have been cuter.
Yeah, that's so. No, totally. Your work would have paled.
Anyway, now, I think, again, what makes me a little crazy about Pleasure Island is obviously this did work, but, you know, in the end, it wasn't making as much. You know, again, the problem with Disney is it's not enough to make some money. You have to make a lot of money.
Right.
And a lot of money on a consistent basis. And the Adventures Club was expensive to run.
Yeah, it had talent, right?
Yep.
It had the skilled talent to do it.
Yep. And it just eventually... much like the Comedy Warehouse, it's just like, this costs a lot of money. And in the case of the actual Physical Adventures Club, they were dealing with so many locals who would come in at night and sit down in a chair and sit there for, you know, 4 or 5 hours at a time. I mean, people would literally walk in, paying guests would walk in, look over the edge, see that the hall was full. It's like, well, I don't want to go in there. And it's like, these people are here every night, and they don't buy drinks. You know, they're just here to interact with the cast.
Oh, that's a shame.
It in a lot of ways, it helped kill the club.
That's a shame. So we've got the Apricot Lane Boutique on our right, mm-hmm. but then one of my all-time favorite restaurants in all of Disney World, Raglan Road on our left. Raglan Road, I've heard, Jim, is supposed to be the prototype for all future dining establishments in Walt Disney World, in Downtown Disney.
It's and you can understand, looking at the physical layout of the place, why that is. Between, for example, the quick service around the other side,
yep.
The bar component, the fact that people can sit down, you have live entertainment.
It's got a store.
No, that's
so it's got a quick service, it's got retail, mm-hmm. it's got a bar, it's got sit down, and it's got live music. It's literally got everything you want in Walt Disney World.
That's exactly.
Here.
And... you know, but the downside of it is you now have to find 10 of these.
Yeah.
You know?
It's fun for us to sit in Raglan Road and try and figure out what other similar concepts would work. like country music. You could kind of, sort of, maybe see how country music would work the same way, right? And maybe, possibly, kind of, sort of, a rock and roll cover band type of club. But that gives you three. You need 12.
No, that's it exactly. And, you know, Disney struggles, to create these one-of-a-kind dining experiences that people get excited about and, you know, want to come back to multiple times over their vacation.
And the food's good here, too.
It is. Yeah. It is. So
they've got a named chef. He understands the he understands the cuisine. He understands what the tourists want. You know, something that's authentic but not too authentic, right? Have you been, to the Nine Fine Irishmen out in Vegas?
No,
New York. So it's run by the same company.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, they've got a bar there that I swear to God is the Haunted Mansion. You walk in, and it's got a bookcase with busts, you know, like when you walk in. Mm-hmm. I walk into it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm in the Haunted Mansion. And then after, like, you know, three gin and tonics, you're like, you're singing Grim Gang Ghosts, right? It's classic. All right, we're at right in front of Fulton's Crab House right now. We've got Portobello on our left. Have you been there since the menu change?
No, I have not.
It's not bad. I mean, it's decent Italian. It's easy enough to get into at night. The back is actually lovely because it overlooks the water. Have you been to Fulton's recently?
No, and in fact, it's interesting you mentioned ghosts because, again, to me, the ghosts of the Empress Lily are kind of hard to shake.
With the steamboat.
Yeah. Again, this was when this place was struggling, and it was struggling when they initially.
Oh yeah, I remember.
They changed the names multiple times. And they built this with the hope that this would give it a Disney-esque icon. And once they put character dining in here, it became a concept that swept the resort.
Right.
And you know, the irony is that they've completely stepped away from that here, and now it's this crab place.
That's interesting. So we're looking at the lunch menu, which is served until 4 o'clock. Most of the entrees are somewhere between, let's say, $11 and $18, which is, I guess, isn't bad for a lunch menu, especially seafood.
And again, just that theme park math. You're here. It's like, well, that's not so terrible, I guess.
Yeah, $18 for lunch, I guess. Yeah, so. Okay. You know, times four, $72.
That it's 85 degrees out, 1,200% humidity. I'm inside. I'm sitting down. I'm drinking a cool beverage. This is worth it.
Yes, it's totally worth it right now.
So
we're walking up now on T-Rex. So, Jim, I was doing some research on the Disney dining plan, and one of the things I've heard, could be a rumor, don't know if it's true, right? Yeah, I've heard this, probably fourth hand. But one of the interesting things I've heard was T-Rex and to a lesser extent, the Rainforest Cafes, they're known for their extensive menus, 15, 20, 25-page menus with literally every sort of thing you could possibly want on it. But since T-Rex has started taking the dining plan, they're being forced to simplify the menu and take out some of the more expensive options because the restaurant can't make money on the allowances that Disney gives them for the table service meals. So what you should see at some point in the future is the menu going from, 20 or pages or so down to, like, 6. And you'll see an elimination of things like, surf and turf and the high-end filet, and instead get simpler, cheaper cuts of meat.
But again, that's what's driving the bus. I mean, again, the dining plan is so successful, so many people have committed to it. It's like you either get on board or you miss out.
Yeah, or you see, no one comes to your restaurant because you don't accept the dining plan.
Yeah, so.
So, but it's funny because, people make the dining plan very, very popular, mm-hmm. but they don't realize that by making it so popular, you're essentially constraining everyone's choices because mm-hmm. they can only make money on the economics of the plan if they offer, four things, two steaks, mm-hmm. Two steaks, a pork, a chicken, a pasta, and a vegetarian option or something like that.
But again, it is what it is. I mean, I part of the problem is you're at Disney World. To throw 12 pages of choices at somebody who's been in a theme park all day with their brain frying.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's true, too. Simplification's probably a good thing there. All right, we're walking into a Fresh Appeal and into Baby Cakes. Baby Cakes, Jim, is one of my all-time favorite places in downtown Walt Disney World. Downtown Disney, because it's got it's vegan, gluten, casein, everything free dining. They've got cupcakes. We're going to grab some samples here in a second. They've got cupcakes. They've got donuts. They've got all kinds of fabulous stuff over there. We're going to take a break right here, and we'll be right back. All right, so we're done with baby cakes. We're eating our vegan carrot cake cupcake, which is fantastic, by the way. If you guys get a chance to eat at Baby Cakes, go ahead and do so. Jim, we're walking out of Baby Cakes. We're making a right, and we're heading up to the Lego Superstore, the new and improved, large. You know, oddly, the building not actually built out of Legos.
Yeah, and, you know, I have to admit, I'm a little intrigued as to putting this much effort into expanding this at a time when Legoland is literally opening, what, 50, 60 miles from here?
Yeah, about 45 minutes, maybe an hour drive.
Yeah. Just normally, this isn't how Disney plays. You know, it's like, oh.
Normally, there'd be a mysterious fire at the Lego, Lego
that's
store.
That's exactly. It's just sort of like, you know, but I would imagine you can walk through this entire building and there isn't a brochure or any mention of the park over in Lakeland.
Probably not.
So.
We're walking past the giant dragon Lego sculpture on our left in the water. And looks like the seven dwarves on our right, rendered entirely in Legos. That's a Lego builder's dream right there. And then, of course, they've got the outside space, which draws kids in. Actually, it's a pretty well-designed store. And I love me a Lego.
Well, you know, have you been following the new controversial female Lego sets?
No.
Oh, my Lego friends, where it's literally Legos for little girls. And if you thought they were upset about healthy habits, you know.
Oh.
You're sort of like, how dare you? That stereotype girls, you know. So,
really, what's the problem with Legos?
Well, it's, you know, it's Lego sets for shopping or fashion,
right.
And you're just sort of like, all right, you know.
No math or engineering or science or anything.
No,
like that.
That's it exactly.
That's their own.
So,
all right. So we're walking past now World of Disney and Wetzel's Pretzels in 41st Street. A clever name, actually. Not badly. Oh, they're redoing the volcano over at. Rainforest Cafe.
Well, they have to. It's falling in on itself.
Oh, there's that. What about World of Disney? Anything going on here?
To be honest, it's more these days. They just love talking about the, you know, this has more sales per square foot than any store on Disney property.
Really?
And
anything in the Magic Kingdom?
Seriously, I mean,
really?
Even the Emporium has fallen behind this.
Wow.
So, but again, when you consider how much Disney merch there is inside there, and in fact there is evidently an aggressive plan in place to increase display space, and you know,
really,
and again also sort of supposedly reaching out to social media to try to drive the bus here. So, you know, I don't know how that's quite going to work.
Only 9 years old.
That's incredible.
So anyway, we're now kind of entering the original shopping village, and you can always tell this because of the kind of craftsman-like design.
Yeah, it's sort of arts and crafts, sort of single story. Well, arts and crafts is the architecture. Yeah, this is the original worker place.
That's it exactly. And in fact, the irony here is that when you came here in 74, 75, you honestly couldn't find any Disney merchandise. This was, you know, for example, the glass sculpting place over here, the
Arubis Brothers.
Yes. They're one of the only pieces that have actually survived. You know, they were, I mean, goldsmithies and potters. And, you know, the idea was that they figured if you wanted Disney, you were over the Magic Kingdom. But they wanted something that would compete with downtown Orlando. They wanted to draw the locals. They figured, okay, arts and crafts, let's do that. And it died a dog's death. It just, they couldn't get anybody to come over here. So, but again,
really?
That was, the original name was, you know, the Shopping Village at Lake Buena Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly it became the Walt Disney World Shopping Village. You know, to try to nail home that idea that you are, you know, here at Disney. And they kept jiggering the mix of stories. And eventually realized that, look, people here are Disney. They want Disney. And, you know, now, I mean, if you think of how many stories you have here that either embrace, you know, a certain set of characters, whether it's the Once Upon a Christmas,
right,
or the Winnie the Pooh stores, or Once Upon a Toy, I mean, it's all Disney 24/7. So,
yeah, that's sort of the thing that amazes me about the presence of Disney characters here. Mm-hmm. That you know, you could get them in any of the parks, and the merchandise is essentially the same. That people have this essentially bottomless appetite for Disney characters, and we're sort of here on a Monday afternoon, end of February. It's crowded.
Yep.
And there's people at every table, you know, outside, you know, drinking stuff. There's, you know, all the shops are busy. We're walking past a Little Mismatched, which is the store that sells mismatched socks. Clever idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crowded. It's crowded, and it's warm too.
Absolutely. And you know, again, this is not at the time when people are traditionally having dumped out of the parks and looking for things to do. I mean, we're middle of the day. People are still in line for Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, even as we speak.
Yeah, I mean, you come back at 7 o'clock, it's going to be even more busy than this.
But anyway, we have Captain Jack's over here, which was among, you know, the first of the, you know, the facilities built here, one of the first restaurants. And it's interesting that it survived, but, you know, but what's fascinating now is that for something that debuted here, I mean, they now have their electronic touch, you know, the menus for here are sort of, you know, indicative of what's going to spread out for the rest of the resort. So
it's true,
both old and new. But yeah, this was, in a weird sort of way, this was planting a flag for a version of Disney that never happened. The shopping village was supposed to be where, you know, right over where the Disney Institute
Saratoga Springs.
You know, that's where the Treehouse Villas were, and that's where, you know, the start of the community of Lake Buena Vista.
Right.
I mean, you got to remember that when they originally built Walt Disney World, they at least for like 4 or 5 years pretended that they were going to follow through on what Walt was going to do. That they were not necessarily going to start right out with the city, but they'd build, you know, vacation homes and, you know, condos and places you could rent. And, you know, it's fascinating to read the annual reports from 74, 75, 73, you know, all that, where they're trying. They're legitimately giving it a shot. But, you know, here comes the oil embargo of 73, 74. And, you know, coupled with, you know, stagflation.
Right.
And suddenly Disney is just trying to figure out how to get people into the theme parks, let alone
A prototype community of tomorrow.
So, yeah. You know, this, you know, the shopping village, again, was supposed to service the people who were staying in those places. And this is as far as they got. And they then began to realize, we can't build a shopping mall for people who aren't here. We have to build a shopping mall for the people who are here. And they want Disney. You know, they want Disney clothes. They want Disney plush. They want Disney, you know, food. And so it just gave itself over, and now here we are. I mean, if you look across the way there, I mean, this used to be just a little village of crafts along the waterfront.
Yeah. Now World of Disney has a 2 or 3 story building.
Yeah.
Lego is at least 1.5. Yeah. I mean, and again, look at it; it's crowded.
I don't know. I understand that, you know, you can only mourn for the past so much because, you know, the reality is that almost from the day that. You know, there's a famous story about it's, you know, June of 67, and they're having a meeting about the Walt Disney World project, and here's Richard Irvine, who's the guy in charge of, you know, building, you know, the resort, and he's okay, and we've got our North and South Road started, and this is where we're going to build Epcot, and we got, you know, the theme park's going to go here, and Roy interrupts him and says, you know, Richard, Walt's dead, you know, and so even as early as 67, they were like, look, I know what we're telling people about what we're doing in Florida, but I don't think we're building this city.
Mm.
You know, and you know, that's always an interesting thing. It's always interesting to watch Disney kind of two-step around that because, you know, because everyone's seen the photo of Walt standing in front of that model.
Yep.
You know, and that's why they bought all this land in Florida to build this city. And now it's all about, again, we were just earlier today recording all of our Epcot Resort stuff, and it's just sort of like there are, you know, 11,000 hotel rooms over there. Not a city, but 11,000 hotel rooms.
It's a small city. It's big, it's almost as big as the town I live in. Yeah. You know, give or take 1,000 people.
But, you know, this, you know, and they worked really hard to try to get people coming over from Hotel Drive here.
Yeah.
You know.
Can you walk from Hotel Drive from Buena Vista? Sorry, the hotel, what is it called? Hotel Plaza Boulevard.
You can. In fact, the interesting thing is it was made a little more difficult by the construction of Once Upon a Toy. but, you know, you can get over here. But, you know, again, it just, what's fascinating about this whole area is just all of the chances that were tried and didn't quite work out. I mean, if you think about Saratoga Springs being transformed from the Disney Institute. I mean, did you ever get over there and take any classes?
No, I didn't.
When it was the Institute?
But my sister had. She said it was interesting. It was sort of the experience vacation about 20 years before experience vacations became popular.
No, that's it exactly. And in fact, you know, I remember talking with Jim Korkus. He was among the staff at the place, and you know, they had this big meeting about, you know, Eisner's talking to them, but we're fully committed to this project, and we're going to be, you know, we're going to give it 5 years to build this audience. And 18 months in, they were, I mean, literally shutting it down. That it just, you know, people don't come to Walt Disney World to learn how to cook, you know.
Or rock climb. I remember rock climbing.
You know, this is exactly. You drive up and here's this climbing wall, and it's like, well, maybe if you put a vegan cupcake on the top, they might, you know, maybe they'd go for that. But I don't know. It just, you know, this is a part of the park or the part of the resort that just, again, kind of makes me sad because, again, there were so many missed opportunities, but it is what it is. It you know, look, people vote with their feet.
Yeah.
All right? And if there was nothing about this mix that would bring out the Orlando locals, there was nothing about this original mix of crafts and that sort of thing that would get people to come out from our hotels and, you know, and now it's all about trying to get the mix to work and whether it's...
I mean, it seems to be successful now. You get a lot of turnover in the shops.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that there's a marketplace here, I think, is fairly well established.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, I mean, you think about how much turnover do you get in your standard mall, you know?
And
that's
especially
ultimately
lately,
what this is. It's a mall.
It's an outdoor mall.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
So what's going to happen over the next couple of years here? Just to kind of wrap up this podcast.
Realistically, again, you know, we're in this strange space where Disney is continuing to look for partners that will come in here that are willing to play by Disney's rules, whether it's, you know, creating a simplified menu that works for the Disney dining system, or it's, you know, doing the sort of hands-on type stuff that people respond to.
Not hands-on crafts.
Yeah. For example, one of the things that they keep eyeballing to bring in here, because it's very successful at Disneyland Resort, is a Build-A-Bear.
Oh, really?
You know, but again, it's just sort of the notion of you will allow us to put all sorts of Disney character-based Build-A-Bears in here. So
a Duffy?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, good. Well, we'll see what happens over the next couple of years. Jim, thanks for being on the show, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.
This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer.